Now, in this factor comparison method, there are 5 important factors. So I had just broadly given you some insights. These are the specific aspects. So cognitive abilities or a mental requirement is one of the important factors. Apart from a skill. So having a knowledge is something and converting it into some sort of a competency. Like let's say an engineer is being considered for a tooling job. So a base level graduate trainee engineer is considered for a tooling job in a reputed manufacturing organization. Now, if the person has already done some sort of internship and is competent at tooling, this may involve giving him or her a higher rating due to the presence of skill in their particular profile. Also, a need for physical requirement. So physical requirement is important as a factor in certain jobs. Along with these are two important factors which comprise of the responsibilities of that specific job role or position and relevant working conditions. So these are 5 important factors which go a long way in determining the quantitative method, which is the factor comparison. Yeah. So now we will look at the major steps in this particular system. How does factor comparison play out? Okay, so it involves these important major steps. Step 1 is selection of the factors. Now we've already seen 5 factors. Yeah, so they may be like skill, mental and educational requirements, physical requirements and responsibility, working conditions, already enlisted and explained previously. The persons writing the job specifications are generally provided with a set of dimensions within which they have to perform this important work. Yeah, so this is what is important as the first stepping stone or the first step, that is the selection of factors. Now the second step or the second major step is the selection of the key jobs. So the key jobs, they basically serve as a standard against which all other jobs tend to be compared. For example, the manager's job may be a key job, and there will be another set of jobs where they will be compared. Okay. So a key job is one whose contents have become stabilized over a period of time and whose wage rate is considered to be satisfactory and acceptable. Like let's say there are 8 locations of a specific IT organization. So a manager's job or a project manager's job may be looked up at those 8 locations because your organization might require, you know, some 10, 20, 30 or more managers at each, you can say, location or throughout the locations. The next step is that of, you know, continuing. Okay, so that is the ranking of key jobs. So now we will rank the selected jobs that happened as a benchmark in the previous step. Okay, so the selected jobs are ranked under each factor. And they are done so by a specific committee. So they are responsible to rate them. And this is done in an independent manner. Ranking is therefore, like the previous qualitative method, made on an individual basis. And then a meeting is held to develop a consensus. Now, what is a consensus, students? A consensus basically is coming together to develop a joint decision. So if there is a difference in the factors by each individual, the team comes together or the committee comes together and they create a consensus to generalize those differences to come to a common platform. Now, step 4, it entails assigning. So this is a very important step in the job evaluation, this factor comparison method. Assigning monetary value or money value is what is important here, and it is assigned or given to each factor so as to determine the wage or rate for each key job. So these factors will be accumulated according, you know, along with their monetary value. So the basic pay for each key job is allotted to each factor, and this should reflect a range from the lowest to the highest. So this is what is important. Then follows the step 5, which is comparison. The name itself is comparison. So comparing all the jobs with the key jobs. All other jobs thus are compared with the list of key jobs. And this is done to know their relative importance and position in the scale of the jobs. So, you know, you might want to create a hierarchy table which can help with this particular process. Now let's look at the advantages of the factor comparison method. So one of the key advantages is the factor comparison method. It permits a more systematic comparison of jobs and is less vague. It is less prone to personal preferences and biases because of coming out with factors, determining them both individually and on a group basis, providing them with a monetary or a number value, and then coming out with results. There is also a comparison done with a key job profile. It is also flexible as it has no upper limit on rating that a job may receive on a factor. So this brings a good amount of flexibility to this particular method. A few other advantages that have been cited here are the procedure of rating new jobs by comparing with other standards or key job is logical, and it is not too difficult to accomplish, as we've seen in our previous discussions. It's also a scheme that in corporate money value, the determination of wage rates is automatic. So we refer to a structure, we refer to a scientific basis, and thus the process is basically more robust over the qualitative methods. Now, along with advantages, we also have a specific set of disadvantages. Now here, as you can see, it entails more details and thus becomes complicated to apply, and at a basic level is difficult to explain to the workers who might be interested in knowing how their wages are articulated. The use of present wages for the key jobs may initially create errors into the plan. So sometimes there are dynamic developments, sometimes there are disruptions in technology, and these factors need to be computed. If not done, then these may relate to an error. Another important disadvantage is that the use of the 5 factors is a growth of the technique that is developed by its organizations. And using the same 5 factors for all organizations, for all jobs in the organization, may not always be appropriate. So to simplify this, what this means is that, you know, an organization might have a need for different factors rather than just the 5 factors that were mentioned. So this may be a sort of a drawback for this particular method. So the next method that falls under the quantitative category is known as point rating. Now students, this method is similar to the comparison, the factor comparison, yet it has some important variations that we will observe. So point rating is a method of evaluating jobs for the purpose of setting wage or salary levels in which a number of compensable job factors are identified. Each factor is then divided into degrees or levels, and points are assigned. So this is what is very critical. This is where certain weighted points, they are assigned to each level or each degree. The jobs can then be rated according to their total point score. So let's say 5 degrees are appointed, like let's say the knowledge level, a skill level, a cognitive ability, you know, the experience, and maybe a fifth factor of interpersonal skills. Now each level will not be having the same rating. They will be rated on a different weight, or they will be points which will be having a different rate. Now point rating includes jobs. Okay, in this method, jobs are expressed in terms of key factors. Then points are summed up to determine the wage rate for the job. So factors like the ones which we had discussed in the previous methods, but then points further, they kind of specify, or they specialize in a specific need. The point rating procedure has to be clearly defined from the very beginning. This involves the following steps. Step one is the listing of the jobs. So the jobs have to be determined first, which are to be evaluated. They are usually clustered. So in many of these methods, you see that the jobs, they are clustered to make the process much simpler. So this should cover all categories of jobs that the industry or the organization has. For example, skilled, unskilled, semi-skilled, professional, and executives. So these are also, sort of the layers in the organization. The second step is selecting and defining of the factors. So identify the common factors to all the identified jobs, such as skill, the effort, the responsibility, the job conditions, etc. For example, somebody who's working on an oil rig, for them, the factors will be, they will be drastically different from somebody who's working in, an analysis agency, or maybe the IT industry, or maybe in FMCG or some other place. So we need to identify those factors common to the identified jobs. Step three involves dividing of the determined factor in step two, and dividing those factors into what we know as degrees. Now, once those factors are selected, like let's say responsibility, skill, cognitive ability, they must be divided into certain useful degrees to make them operational. So as per my insights, what happens here is that you might want to further divide those factors, that is what we mean here, to make them more simple to understand. So the point method generally uses from 4 to 6 degrees for each factor. So those factors are further divided into those 4 to 6 degrees to make them more simple and comprehensible. So the fourth step includes the weighting of the factors. The relative importance of each factor selected has to be then determined. In other words, the factors must be weighted. Now, what do we mean by weighting? In its simplest sense, it may include that some factor is more important than another factor for that job role, correct? So it has to be done by observation, it has to be done by experience. And in most cases, there's no scientific or ready-made method for weighting factors, because simply because of the fact that it may be different for different organizations, different for different departments in the very same organization, and so on. Hence, there is no systematic or scientific way. The next is step five, where allocation points, okay, to each degree are provided. So we allocate the raters. They generally tend to provide points to each degree. So once the relative importance of the factors has been determined in a preliminary or a specific manner, The factors suitably are divided into degrees, and each degree must be assigned a numerical value. So each degree, as we have seen, a factor can have 4 to 6 degrees underneath it, and these can be provided a quantitative or a numerical value. The next step involves the evaluation of those jobs. So once the factor plan is adopted, it is usually, or it is usual, to prepare an evaluation handbook explaining the procedure to be followed and summarizing all elements required for the evaluation. So you prepare certain forms, you prepare certain reference manuals or handbooks which tell what procedure has to be followed so that the assessment or the evaluation of those factors and points may be done. Step 7 involves assigning money value points like those done in the factor comparison method. Yeah. So for this purpose, points are added to give the total value of a job. Its value of a job, its value is then translated into terms of money with a predetermined formula. So there's accumulation of the points that are given and the corresponding money value, and it is put into a formula which in turn provides us with the specific wage or salary. Now, what are the advantages of this method after having looked at the 7-step process in detail? The point method is superior and widely used method. If you see, there is a lot of research, a lot of analysis that is done. The factors are further divided into degrees. A point-based weightage is provided, and then it is put into a formula. So it gives us a numerical basis, further reducing any personal biases or prejudices. Once the scales are developed, they can be used for a long time. So since this is done in such a proficient, detailed manner, we can use them for a longer period of time. There are some disadvantages as well. As you understand, this is something which is cumbersome. This is something which is too detailed, and hence it is a costly affair. The development and the installation of this system calls of heavy expenditure. Now just consider a year-long startup which is growing but does not have those layers of hierarchy that can be seen in established organizations. Would you, as an HR in right mind, consider this method in the early phases of your organization? The answer might be, as expected, a no for now. You might want the organization to grow, probably become a sort of a unicorn or more established in its nature, and then you might want to lead such an initiative. Hence, this is also, as you see, according to the steps that we have seen, a complex method. So adaptation of the whole procedure is very difficult and time consuming as compared to the previous quantitative and qualitative methods. Now we will move on. We have discussed 4 important methods of job evaluation. Now we look at job evaluation and its role in setting the salary structures. So a compensation program is what is the need of the hour, and it includes or encompasses more than just a pay schedule. Compensation programs need to be reviewed on a regular basis and should also be developed so that major revisions are required only occasionally. Job evaluation is thus the part of the balanced compensation package. As you can see, its role is, you might know, it is rooted in equity. So analysis is done so as to keep the closed job roles in, you might say, an equitable manner. Thus, it's a process that serves the needs of the compensation system in an organization by determining the relative value of one job in relationship to another. correct? So this is a sort of a numerical relationship that happens. And when people perceive others in their, you know, in a similar job role, getting a similar salary, they are satisfied. If they notice somebody doing a similar job to theirs with a similar experience, but getting some drastic difference in the salary, this may lead to a dissatisfaction on their part. Thus, job evaluation is used to accomplish the following organizational tasks. The first one is to identify the job structure of the organization. So does the organization have a sound or a robust job structure, which is perceived as something which is equitable and fair to those folks who work in that organization? It also is used to bring order, which is a sort of a system, and of course the equity, which we've discussed many a time, to the relationship amongst the jobs. So a high ranking or a high rated job, is it different from a job which is low rated, is what this determines or helps to determine. It also is used to develop a hierarchy of the job value to create a sort of a pay structure, which we've seen earlier. So a CFO position in a prominent organization will have a drastically different pay structure than what is received by a manager in finance. Similarly, a CMO position, a chief marketing officer who is responsible for the marketing activities on a global scale, would be drastically different than the pay structure of a marketing professional who is at a base level. And this is, again, differentiation is created by the job evaluation. It is also used to achieve a consensus amongst managers and employees concerning the jobs and pays. Of course, if everybody, they tend to concur, only then will the organization function in a smooth fashion. Otherwise, there will be continuous conflicts and differences that will be evident, and they will impede the growth of the organization. Now we will move on to the next topic in this particular chapter, that is the salary surveys. So what is a salary survey? Now I believe we are all aware of a survey and have been a part of some sort of a survey. The most common are the online surveys, which we receive in our inboxes many a time. These may be surveys related to our peers for their performance on LinkedIn, or some product or service requesting us for a survey. Similarly, we also have something which is known as a salary survey from the context of salaries and compensation. So it's nothing but a tool which is specifically designed for specialists who design wages, salaries, and the remuneration, and the managers to define a fair and a competitive salary for the employees of a company. Yeah, so it's nothing but a kind of a questionnaire, which may have a qualitative or a quantitative set of questions, which may determine whether the salary that is being paid to the employees is fair and is on par with other departments, with other occupations of similar nature, maybe other organizations in the same domain. So there are multiple parts of a salary package to be considered, which may be included in the survey sheet, which include the base pay, the incentives, the retirement plans, the bonuses, the benefits, maybe for the top management folks, certain perquisites, which are a part of their job role. Now, what does the salary survey comprise of, or what does it measure? It measures the competitiveness of the organization on the pay market and provides the benchmark information about salaries on the general pay market. Now, what does this mean? Let's say there are 5 IT organizations and they are working in similar technologies. Correct? Like, let's say there are in the area of Mumbai, there are five IT organizations and they all work on Python, Java, machine learning, and so on, right? They provide certain services to their global clientele. Now, this makes up a pay market. So, those five companies, along with similar organizations in the same industry, okay, they make up a pay market. Correct? So, when the organizations operate on several pay markets, so what happens is this particular, these set of companies, they are considered as a sort of a benchmark. Yeah? So, this benchmark is the basis of a salary survey for a company to know whether they are on par with the market, whether they are paying too less or too much as compared to the benchmark. So if there's a payment which is too less, there tends to be a correction. Yeah, and this can be done by the salary surveys. So this is one of the critical benefits. The salary surveys, they ideally provide the information about the average salary review percentage. So salary review would be probably done after the appraisal. So what is the general practice in the industry? So as of 2022, what would it be? Would it be a 10%? Would it be a 12% for certain jobs in an industry is what can be provided by this salary survey. And of course, the allocation of the growth of salaries into specific job positions across the participating organizations. So how much are the other organizations providing is known. The salary surveys provide the information about the new trends as well in the compensation and benefits area. So is there a sum, like let's say now we have all seen that an endemic grew into a pandemic, that was the COVID-19. And what has happened is many a places there are these trends like a hybrid working, okay, or maybe a virtual team working. So are such new things, are they bringing in some changes in the comp and bend areas is what is also informed to our organizations through salary surveys. So the participation in salary surveys is actually a difficult decision, all right? So what is it important? Huh? So now this is another topic where we have moved from benefits of salary surveys, and before that we came to know this as a concept. Now we will look at, okay, is it really critical or what is important to know about salary surveys? So if your organization is going to, you know, take part in a salary survey, so what sort of things should we be aware of before doing this? So the participation in salary surveys is a sort of a difficult decision as the organization has to choose the right compensation consultant. For example, if the consultant, you know, themselves are not updated, and if they have any obsolete information, this obsolescence may lead to further demotivation. So if employees get to know that their you know, friends in another company have got a better deal, and if there are three or four such instances, and your compensation consultant has not provided those details, it'll be difficult. There will be a lot of conflict, there will be a lot of dissatisfaction, and further might lead to turnover in the organization. Human resources team has to have a clear plan for the usage of the salary survey results and the presentation, including the action plan that has to be prepared for the top management. Now, this means if your organization is following a certain trend and you see a sort of a disruption because of the salary survey results, do you have some sort of a plan where you can make amends and you can present those to the top management is what needs to be asked at this particular point in time. Now, salary surveys are analysis, as we have come to know, of the compensation data. Now, this data may include quantifiable aspects of compensation Now these are enlisted over here. Let's take a quick look at them. They may be base salaries. They may be increments or increases in the percentages or amounts that a person receives as wages. The merit related increases. So if something has been observed, which is, a sort of a merit, then that might be included here. The salary ranges themselves, the starting salary of individuals who would be joining, the incentives and bonuses. So we'll take a detailed look at these, some of these elements in the next upcoming chapters. Allowances and benefits and the working hours. So these are all aspects which can be quantifiable in the compensation, and this information will be provided to us on a fresh basis, of course, through those salary survey results. So salary surveys may include non-quantifiable aspects as well. Now what we have seen is, we have seen a long list, about 8 or 9 points, which pertain to quantifiable aspects, like maybe the merit-related increments, maybe, increments when people join, which is known as a starting salary. Similarly, we have some non-quantifiable aspects here as well, which are explained with the help of this image. The first may be educational requirements. So a salary survey might also prompt you to think if there is some educational qualification or certification which has completed, do they get a better review rating than earlier? It may also prompt us to look at the geographic location. For example, tier 1 cities like Mumbai may differ from tier 2 or 3 cities, like maybe an Aurangabad or maybe a Nasik. And depending on this, the compensation might vary. And this data may be provided through a salary survey. The sourcing of hiring, so whether it's through an IJP which has happened or it's through an external consultant, may also play a vital role. And of course, the working conditions. So these are some of the non-quantifiable aspects which may come to the surface because of conducting of salary surveys. After having understood about what needs to be considered while participating or while you're going to take part, now we will look at how to participate in those salary surveys. So the organization has to select the right compensation consultant who brings the right methodology for the job evaluation and determining the correct job size. So an experienced compensation consultant will be able to do the right justice. They will have the right set of information, they will know about the changes that have happened recently, and will be able to accommodate these factors into the salary survey. And the resultant, aspects or the results that come out will be correct. A good compensation consultant will therefore prepare a detailed implementation plan and will act as the project manager for the first initial salary survey and will provide the help when human resources team prepares the salary survey results presentation. So, a competent person or a competent agency can do a lot of justice and can ensure equity, fairness, and subsequently it may ensure that people stay motivated because of the results of this particular salary survey. Now, how do I choose a salary survey? Okay, so this is a question which might come into the minds of various professionals who are associated with compensation and benefits in their organizations. So the results of the surveys conducted by the third parties can be relatively inexpensive compared to the cost of developing the same results yourselves. Now, what this simply states is, isn't it a good idea to outsource such a complex aspect to some external consultant? It will save our time and we can focus on our core duties rather than getting into these complexities and getting it wrong. The surveys conducted by associations and vendors are often, okay, they tend to have a large number of participants, which results in a more accurate analysis. So the chances of any unnecessary deviations or any unnecessary biases, or you can say myopic or narrow focused analysis, is reduced. So they may be able to encompass or include various aspects which are considered as modern or updated in their salary surveys. Now, these are certain particular aspects, or these are before purchasing survey results or going for a salary survey, you should make that the results, you should ensure, in fact, that the results should contain the appropriate job-related information, correct? So salary surveys collect compensation data for one or more jobs. Now these jobs, they may vary depending on the industry and or the size of the employer. So what is a perfect fit or a match for your organization has to be determined in the form of the appropriate job. Now the job titles in this context should have little or no overlap and should have unique titles that clearly describe the job. Now, if this is done, the salary survey and the results of that survey will prove to be more accurate and will be beneficial in determining the changes that need to happen as a part of the review mechanism. It also should contain a sort of a summary. So the salary survey results should contain a summary of the data analysis. The summary is useful for understanding trends that are existing in the current market, so that the reviews or the changes that will happen will not lead to any subsequent dissatisfaction. It should also contain what is known as a standard methodology or a structured methodology, which might include elements like, is there a minimum number of responses needed before a reporting of results? So as we all know, surveys will be administered to different industry participants, and what sort of responses are got from them. So it's not just your own organization, it will be coming from a wide arena, okay? And is there a minimum number? So the higher the number, the more proficient could this survey be. Data should not be reported for too few incumbents. Now, what is the meaning of incumbents? It is the people who participate in such a survey. So if, like, let's say if a survey is done for startups and only five startup, they are part of the survey, or only 50 people are the incumbents, do you really think this will reflect the sentiment of the entire startup market in a specific demography? So for that, you would need to increase the startup number from at least 5 to at least a good 5 or 600, which is more accurate than the earlier citing. You also need another aspect apart from the methodology, which is known as a sort of a tabulation to be done. So at a minimum, the survey results must be tabulated by the job title. So in that specific job title, what are those series of questions? And those series of questions should be beneath the heading of the job title. This means that the average or median salary should be reported separate for each job in the survey. So here what needs to happen is, we need to look at any deviations, of course, but even the average salaries and where do they lie. Because any sort of deviations would not lead to an accurate review on a later basis. But if you see that, let's say, out of the 600 startups, maybe 450 startups are in the median or the average, where they are paying, let's say, for a base level programmer in that startup, they're paying a salary, a CTC of about, say, 8.5 lakhs, where there are deviations where some pay 3.75 and some pay 11.5. Now, if your organization is paying something to the tune of 7, they might do a market correction and they might increase it by a lakh or a lakh and a half to remain with the average salary over here. So this is how a tabulation may help. So if the survey includes data from a large number, as I had mentioned, the value of the results will be increased if the results can be tabulated by other employer demographics such as funding type, public or private, industry, geographic region, size, etc. So we'll come to know what makes up the average, what makes up the deviations accordingly. Well, in this manner, students, we have successfully completed discussions related to the third chapter. We have completed a discussion on the important methods of job evaluation. We've also seen in detail as to why salary surveys have become an important component in determining of other reviews that happen, the corrections that happen, and how they tend to connect with the job evaluation process. Thank you.